Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Find Your Model Health, the official podcast for those looking to optimize their long-term health and weight goals and understand how their body really works. I'm your host, Shemaine Laney. I'm a nutritional therapist, integrative health practitioner, and certified iridologist. I'm very happy to have you back with me for another piece of your day. I have a very fantastic, distinguished guest on today to have a really interesting conversation with us. But before I introduce her, I must remind you that the information in these podcast episodes is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. Please consult your health practitioner before making any lifestyle changes. So today we are talking with Dr. Romy Mushtaq. She is a board-certified physician who specializes and is distinguished in the area of neurology, and she is the creator of the Brain Shift Protocol. She's getting ready to release her upcoming book, The Busy Brain Cure, The 8-Week Plan to Find Focus, Tame Anxiety, and Sleep Again. And she is a leading authority in all things stress management and wellness. And she was kind enough to bless us with her presence before releasing this book, because I know a lot of you are dealing with a lot of stress and anxiety and all the social demands that life has to offer nowadays. So I'm excited to have you on, Dr. Romy. And again, I don't mean that in the pretentious way. This is going to be a great conversation.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, thank you. It totally is. Shemaine, thank you so much for having me. And you know, I've been looking forward to this conversation so long that when I got booked on your podcast, it was the cold of winter. And we are recording this podcast right now in April. My book came out in January, including in Canada, globally, and just really honored to say it is a USA Today, Amazon Audible bestseller and available globally. Thank you. Where books are sold, The Busy Brain Cure. So it is already out and we are here to help busy brain.
We did book this weeks ago. And as I mentioned to you earlier, you'll have to excuse me because it's still winter here. It's still snowing here.
We were just talking about it. It's still winter in Calgary where you were living, and winter where I live in Florida in the United States, the sun is still shining. So, you know, yes, it is. It is, but not at all. We thank all the listeners globally, wherever they're listening to either one of us right now, because time is so sacred and I don't take anybody's time for granted.
Exactly. So let's hear a bit about your story. You started off as a physician and then you transitioned into neurology. So what happened there?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I was raised here in the United States as a daughter of immigrants, South Asian immigrants, and definitely had a success mantra growing up from my parents of, we have one daughter and you will become a doctor. And so I entered neurology at a time where less than 5% of the brain doctors in America were women. And I loved my job. And, you know, we'll give you the listeners a link to the TED Talk that I did back in 2014. And it's the story in my book. But back then, you know, even in medicine, we didn't talk about your mental health and are you happy at work, or let alone burnout. And I, like so many of your listeners, was trying to do everything right and everything perfect. And by the way, I loved my job, seeing patients, doing research, teaching medical students. But I learned firsthand that if you're working under chronic stress, it can lead to physical disease and it can kill you. I almost died. I was only 33, 34 years old, and I ended up in life-saving surgery. And I remember, Shemaine, sitting in the hospital, recovering after surgery, thinking, good God, nothing I've learned in medical school is going to help me now. Like, what am I going to do? And as people will read in like chapters 5 through 9 of the book, I ended up on a global journey, like wondering what is it that people outside of the United States do to remain happy and healthy? And what are those global healing traditions? And somewhere along the way in healing myself, that aha moment came to me like, oh my gosh, there is a better way to treat my brain and mental health patients. And I came back and, you know, by this time was practicing mindfulness and meditation and became certified. And then also, you know, got board certified in integrative medicines, this whole idea of how can we bring Eastern and Western medicine together? So very much up your alley of everything that you talk about on your podcast. And I think that's why no matter what season people are in life right now, it's so important that you and I chat today.
It is. And I actually did come across your TED talk before we even connected, actually, I think a year or two ago. And I remember the conversation, and it's funny how we got brought together. But you're right. It whether or not, and I say this all the time, whether or not you're a doctor, a health practitioner like myself, you could be the best in the industry. But once that chronic stress is there, nobody's exempt. Nobody. And we can give you all the tools in the world. We can give you the best meal plans, the best supplements, the best tips.
Agreed.
But if you're not addressing the stress and how that is having that ripple effect through your system, you're going to be struggling to feel good and get results. Like that's just the way it is.
It is. And, you know, burnout is not just about being in the healthcare field. When you look at the data in the United States, in Canada, in Ireland, your home country, in all of the EU, it is a problem in every single industry. Mm-hmm. And especially in a post-pandemic world. And you said it so well. When I first moved here to Florida, I was still seeing patients one-to-one in an integrative medicine clinic. Mm-hmm. And our clients were people like athletes and the high performing executives. They were doing everything right and eating clean, running marathons, doing Ironmans, and all the latest cleanses, and they still were not happy and well. And that's where this aha moment came in for me. And the research started, just not only for myself, but being around high functioning people like you and I, who were like, what's going on? Like, why does it feel like my brain cells are on fire?
Yeah. How is it that we're supposedly doing everything right? We're exercising, we're sleeping, but we're still experiencing this stress response that the people who are not doing that are. And you also said something that really struck a chord in me. You said you loved your job, but that didn't mean that the job was overwhelming. Just because we love it, it can still be very overwhelming.
Yes.
Almost suck us into this hole of, I can't breathe. What's going on? The emotional distress and everything.
Yes. Yes. And I find that true of most people, probably in your community and my community, is we're good at our jobs. We love our jobs. People love being a parent or a caregiver to elderly, but it can still lead to chronic stress. And especially in today's world, in a post-pandemic world where we've lost boundaries between our personal and professional lives, very few people get to turn off their job in the evening.
Your job's in your house now. Yeah,
your job's in your house, or we have a mobile phone and somebody from work is going to email or text and you don't want to seem unresponsive. And so there's just, you know, or even if you say, I'm not going to work tonight, you sit down and your brain is full of your to-do list that you didn't finish. You know, that's just the way of the world. It's known as being at mental capacity.
Before we loop around to like the proper questions I have for you, do you feel like the pandemic had a big compounding effect on everything? Like people were struggling before, and then we almost got hit with a sledgehammer, and now we're all like getting squeezed so tight with societal demands. And even like you said, we try to log off. I'll put my phone in the other room, but my phone almost, it literally has its own voice. It's saying,
Come back. You're not working. You need to post on Instagram. FOMO, right? Like, well, there's a few things going on. Why people are still stressed out is the most of the stress management health advice that was out there pre-pandemic, to your point, is not addressing how our brains and bodies have changed in a post-pandemic world. And we, between social isolation, the mental health crisis flourishing, people dealing with long COVID, I mean, there's so many issues. And now a lot of people working from home or hybrid or whatever that means, we're at mental capacity in our psychology, and our bodies can't take anymore, and neither can our spirit. And so when somebody finds that three tips on TikTok or in an Instagram reel, we just roll our eyes going, girl, don't you think I tried that already? And
if
as
I
a
could
doctor,
sleep, I would sleep.
Yeah, I would, right? And so as a doctor and researcher, that was my job to assess, like, how have our brains changed in a post-pandemic world due to chronic stress? And what is the solution for individuals listening and their teams and the companies? And that is the world I live in now. Like, how do you identify it and create change?
Yeah. And you have a term that in your book and that you use a lot, and it is the title, but it's the busy brain. And
yes.
I hadn't heard that term before you. I would be more, be probably because of my Irishness, I'd be more tending towards the flustered brain, or I say I'm discombobulated a lot, but I'm one of the few.
Oh, I like that word. I'm going to use that word. I'm discombobulated.
Oh. Yeah, basically, yes. Like in Ireland, if you use yes. that term, is like, I don't know if I'm going left or right or up or down.
But I mean, that's my sense of direction. Normally, if you put me in a car, I'm discombobulated.
Siri, where am I going? So the busy brain is interesting, though, because it insinuates the idea that the brain is just constantly going and never stops.
Yes. So the busy brain has nothing to do with our outside world. The busy brain is the negative impact. And by the way, I just heard Siri. Isn't she one nosy woman? You say her word and then she just turns
up
and starts talking. Yeah. It is. It is. See, there's always somebody listening. Siri, Alexia. What is it? Alexa. Yeah. So, but anyway, the busy brain is this, is when we are under chronic stress and it goes unchecked, it creates a specific pattern of neuroinflammation in our brain and our hypothalamus, the airport traffic control tower of the brain, that's linked to the rest of the functioning of the brain and our bodies. And it creates three specific symptoms that I see, especially in highly intelligent, high-functioning people that you and I serve and that listen to your podcast. And it's this. We're adults and somehow you're like, what's wrong? I can't focus. Do I have adult onset ADHD? Mm-hmm. Along with that, you're feeling anxious all day. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I'm going to do everything that, you know, Shemaine talks about on her podcast to try to rest tonight and sleep. And I'm having difficulty falling asleep due to racing thoughts, or I fall asleep, but I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. And that's the issue that we're dealing with. And that's busy brain. It's a triad of you're needing stimulants all day, like caffeine or Adderall or Vyvanse, to keep up with work, to keep up with life. And then you need alcohol or some other kind of sleeping pill or anti-anxiety pill to calm down at night. The stimulant sedative cycle. We're dependent on chemicals instead of our own mind and spirit to keep going.
Yeah, we're just go, go, go all the time. Mm-hmm. Curious, as you were speaking, do you think this affects women more than men? I personally believe it affects women more because of the way we're designed, and men, of course, their genetics, they're more resilient than women. They're more carefree.
So that actually isn't true, by the way, when you look at neuroscience and neuropsychology. Okay. So we have to be careful when we make these gender neutralizations. And I want to say this as a female brain doctor. Mm-hmm. First of all, you know, I always want to be mindful is that the gender that was assigned at birth is not what someone may identify as, right? But two, the idea that women are wired differently was done by a lot of straight white male neuroscientists. And that's all been debunked.
Okay.
When I looked at the busy brain data, we collected, so we'll put a link in your show notes of the busy brain test. People can take it for free and you get a brain score. 17,000 people took this test mm-hmm. and there was not a difference across gender. It's typically high achieving, intelligent professionals go through this. It might show up a little differently in men and women, meaning we find that when women have a busy brain and they're under chronic stress, their thyroid is more likely to be affected. In men, it could be their insulin resistance and testosterone is more affected, right? So the downstream effect from the airport traffic control tower might be slightly different, but the symptoms are all there.
And was that test a 50-50 split between males and females?
We measured in every industry and it did not show any difference across okay. industries because I'm a keynote speaker and I speak across industries. What we do know in the burnout literature is two things, and I covered this in chapter four, is some industries around the world are more prone to burnout. And unfortunately, sadly, to me, it's one of the most sacred professions. Our teachers and educators around the world are suffering the most. And then after that, frontline responders are policemen, firemen, ambulance drivers, and then in healthcare, right? Because they were at the epicenter of the pandemic and working and experienced that. But no one is immune to burnout across all industries, whether you work in an office or you work at home. The second thing we know is in the workplace, because of the lack of gender equity and equality, that yes, women are more prone to burnout than men, but that has to do a lot with operational issues. Women are often given more tasks to do. They're asked to volunteer for more things. They're less likely to get a promotion. So those are operational issues. It has nothing to do that women are somehow the weaker sex or women's brains can't handle it. That's a misnomer that I really want to highlight and double click on here, because I am a woman that's a champion of STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, and medicine. And the pandemic robbed the pipeline from kindergarten all the way to the C-suite. And we need more women in STEM.
And well, that was my consideration, was the women that I serve in my community and what I know of them. And I don't think it's country specific. Because obviously I'm from two countries. So when I consider everything, it's more a consideration. Well, the women I know, they're running their businesses. They're also raising the kids. They're doing the housework. They're doing the cooking, yes. The cleaning.
Yes.
Whereas the yes. men maybe are gone for the day and then they come home. And I'm yes. not trying to badmouth the males, but this is what I see.
Yes. They come and so home that's and have dinner. Yes. So that's what I call an operational issue. Yes. It has nothing to do with the woman being her brain being weaker or yes. wired differently. Yes. Yes. This is a societal and operational issue. So in the workplace, women aren't paid equally, no matter where you are in the world. And they're tending to be given more tasks to do and they're not promoted. And to your point, no matter where you are in the world, women traditionally have multiple jobs, caring for their jobs, yeah. caring for the house, and caring for family members in the home, whether it's elderly loved ones or children. And so that means there's a longer to-do list that is demanding of women at work and at home. So yes, that issue is there. But as far as the brain science of busy brain, it's men and women equally, because now I get called to speak in corporations around the world. And what you find, especially when I'm speaking at middle-level management, senior management, the top, it's mostly men. So, you know, we see it in both men and women. It just, the labs may look a little differently.
Yeah, so that was the context I was considering. So when we look at male and female, everything being equal, there would be no difference. But unfortunately, everything is not equal now. And women not only work, but we also do everything else. And in that context, then we see a higher instance of the busy brain in women than we would in men.
I don't have the data to do that. Burnout more in men and women, but busy brain, no. Men and women are equally prone to busy brain. I really want to highlight that in our book and in our data.
Yeah, I do see in my male clients, they have the busy brain at night. They're equally affected. But the women.
Yeah. So with our 17,000 people in our data set, it was equally affected. Same with the difficulty focusing and anxiety during the day. So, you know, I'm more data driven. So I don't want men to feel excluded, because the mental health crisis, it affects men as well.
Back to this all connects, as I'm sure you know, back to the career aspect of things.
Yeah.
With the whole drive of entrepreneurship now over the last 5-10 years and the hustle and bustle and always be grinding and the kind of popularization of you always have to be hustling. What do you think the problem is with that? Then we're being encouraged to, you need to, I remember even Dave Asprey at one stage talking about only sleeping 4 hours a night so he can get more done, which is insane.
And that comes out of the corporate world. So, you know, early on in my career doing integrative medicine and speaking, it was dealing with tech clients as well, that alpha male-dominated energy. It didn't matter if you're a man or a woman. It was that energy of you will sacrifice sleep and success at all costs. And that is slowly, thankfully, going away. Mm-hmm. In the Busy Brain Cure, I talk about, I may turn off a lot of your listeners, but I'm going to be honest. I am unapologetically success-driven professional. Like, you know, all praise to God. Like, I am a daughter of immigrants in the United States. English is my third language. And the level of success I've had, it means like I'm here to show others how to do it that are also in marginalized communities and women and all of that. And I'm not going to stop wanting to succeed, but you can do it without working on the edge of burnout, without sacrificing your mental and physical health. And that's what I'm here to discuss, mm-hmm. right? So it isn't this dopamine high that entrepreneurs, to your point, or successful corporate executives are always chasing of, I have 20 things on my to-do list and I'm at that dopamine high of crossing 15. Things off. And I'm going to feel like a failure if I did only 18 of 20 of them, you know? And if I finish all 20, you're like, something must be wrong with me. I'm not productive enough. I need to add 7 more things to the list. You know, that's a busy brain, that false seeking of a dopamine high of how many people liked my Instagram reel or how many people opened my newsletter, or how many people bought my course. That's not the way you do it. But you do, when you heal a busy brain, what I find entrepreneurs are able to do is follow a KPI and then execute on that KPI and do one thing at a time and do it well, rather than the scatterbrain, busy brain of, oh, let me start a podcast. Let me grow my Instagram feed. Let me launch a course. Let me do keynote speaking. Let me start a group mastermind. Like it's chaotic. It's yeah. Your internal busy brain is showing up as a busy brain in business.
Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's zero productivity if you've got a finger in each pot, but you're not fully committed to each pot. Mm-hmm. At some stage, it's kind of I throw up my hands. I'm not completing anything then because there's too much happening. Aww.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And so it is. And then we feel like a failure or we procrastinate. And instead, the idea is heal your busy brain, and then it will heal in your business. And what we find is individuals, whether they're entrepreneurs or working in a company or in an organization, are then focused, and whatever their deliverables are, they're getting done.
Mm-hmm. So slowing down is almost speeding up the productivity. God bless
yes. You. Thank you. Sorry. Just sneeze. Thank you. Pardon me. You know, it's this idea of not slowing down, because that also turns people off. Like mindfulness teaches us, in order to speed up, you must first slow down. So I get that mantra, mm-hmm. but what it is healing the overstimulated brain, so that you are able to use the productivity tools and time management techniques you already have in place. And that we know, when you have a busy brain, a task that, you know, requires your brain, let's say writing or typing, is going to take 6 times longer. And a physical task, let's say you work in a store and you have to fold sweaters or jumpers, as they're called, you know, it is going to take you 3 times as long. So you're just more productive and working more efficiently.
You're more focused. So I know someone out there is saying, okay, so enough of the chit chat. How do I do this? Tell me.
Girl, right?
To do.
Let's go. Let's break it down. It's an 8-week program, the 8-week plan to find focus, tame anxiety, and sleep again. And so we did this research. I researched the cure based in neurology and integrative medicine. And then we tested it in over 1,000 executives before we went to print with the book. So really important to know, because a lot of people come on with random pieces of advice, but we looked in the medical literature. We put this 8-week program, we tested it in our corporate clients across multiple industries, men and women. So I think that's really important to know. Step 1, week 1, take the busy brain test. You can do it for free. We'll include it here in the show notes. You can go to my social media, to the website at Dr. Romy, and get a brain score. Like, let's be practical. I want to know, is your score above a 30? If it is, well, then we're dealing with chronic stress, busy brain, or potentially burnout. We email you the first 2 weeks of the protocol straight away. Week two of the protocol is literally restoring your circadian rhythm. We give you the supplements we recommend that are based on scientific research and give you cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia techniques to do. Mm-hmm. And literally it's spending a week or two restoring your circadian rhythm. And that's one key step. And after that, we introduce concepts during the daytime and in the evening of how to do digital detox and how to take a brain pause. And so the first 4 weeks are all about restoration of circadian rhythm, sleep, and your sanity. So that's the first 4 weeks. Ask me questions, and then we're going to go through weeks 5 through 8.
Well, the first week immediately, I can hear everyone screaming, well, I'm definitely over 30. And to restore my sanity, I need to move to Orlando and live.
Here's the sad thing is I've worked with many companies in Florida, and people here have a busy brain, just it like just the cold weather you're having up in Calgary, sister, because, you know, the sad fact of it is we were talking before we started the podcast, like people come from all over the world to vacation in Florida. I work here. Mm. I wish, you know, we are recording this podcast on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday. I can't even keep talking anymore. I wish I could go drive an hour to the beach or do something, but I'm working. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it knows no boundaries. And so, yes, it's just really important. And, you know, yeah.
Life commitments. I get it, because people come to Calgary to see the mountains and the Rockies and
the famous rodeo, right? In July, yeah, the cowboys. Yes.
You just like you, I can't just go. I'd love to go, but I can't. Yes. I have commitments.
Yes. So yeah, so we're not on a permanent vacation, right? And, you know, I say this in the opening lines of my book. I know, God bless Tim Ferriss and the 4-hour work week and the 4-hour workout plan, but most people I serve don't have the luxury to work just 4 hours a week. Mm-hmm. They are hardworking parents, like you said, women, people who are caring for the house, for the family, their jobs, they have to pay a mortgage. They don't have a luxury to go on a self-care sabbatical. We've got to give them quick brain shifts or easy to implement tools that they can do side by side and keep going and living life and working.
Yeah. In an ideal scenario, the 4-hour week is a nice idea, but most people cannot commit to something like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I'm not wired to even do that. I think like I spend 4 hours a week just on my volunteer work for Girl Scouts USA, and that's not my job or my personal life, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, I spend more than 4 hours a week just cleaning the house.
And that's right, girl, yes.
So we'll do a full loop around to the protocol, because I just want to go back to, like, I'd mentioned to you at the start before we even started recording that the stress is almost out of control for a lot of people I work out. Like it can be at times disheartening for me to want to help people as much as I can, but the pressure of life nowadays is so much. And I speak a lot to my clients. I teach them a lot about circadian rhythm, which is interesting, and the hormonal cycles and the downstream effect. But I think, I don't know if you recall this, 20 years ago, growing up in Ireland, when I started my health training, whenever anyone spoke about stress, it was always, oh, stress is a killer. In Ireland, that was it. Oh, stress will kill you. But it was so woo-woo. People didn't understand what stress was. It was a word and it was an emotion, but we didn't actually know, well, there's a biochemical reaction here. There's a physical reaction that's happening here. And sometimes I wonder, do people still think it's just stress? It's just a word. No. It's woo. No. It's something that's floating around. That's what I want to kind of have you elaborate on. No. I say it all the time, but it's nice for other people to say it too, yeah, like to reinforce.
It is. Well, I think we've gone beyond that. And thank goodness for social media and YouTube and all the things, because what I think the problem is now is we have the wrong definition of stress. Mm-hmm. Is a lot of the tips that are out there talk about the acute stress model, that stress that's just there for a few hours or a day. Mm-hmm. Most of us,
it's not
and
that.
The clients that you care for, we're dealing with chronic stress, mm-hmm, and acute on chronic stress. So, you know, to go back to the example you used, it is chronically stressful to be a working mom or dad with young children and a house to clean and trying to maintain a full-time job. And then an acute stressor comes on top of it, like your child is sick and you have an important, you know, presentation at work that requires you to go to the office and there's no one to help you with your sick child. Like that's an acute on chronic stressor that can tip someone over the edge, right? Yeah. And that there's actually, we go through this in, you know, chapters 1 through 4 and 5 in the book, is this chronic stress model that hits the hypothalamus and the SCN nucleus and circadian rhythm is now affecting the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which hits all 50 hormones in the brain and the body that govern every organ system and the autonomic nervous system. And by the way, all of our roadmaps are a little different. So when I'm under chronic stress, I get GI symptoms in my esophagus and my stomach. Other people may get really bad back pain or moodiness. So everyone's a little different. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a very big understanding in the Western world today of chronic stress and the relationship of chronic stress to, you know, the three biggest killers of men and women: heart disease, cancer, and autoimmune disease. Like all of that, chronic stress is a big underlying factor for that, that will cause the inflammation and the other issues that can lead to these problems. So I don't know that we have that issue anymore. The idea is when I heal my busy brain, I'm more able to see clearly on boundaries, because when I have a busy brain, everything in my brain feels emergent and urgent. Folding the kids' laundry feels as urgent as the sales report that's due tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. But when you heal a busy brain, you can prioritize what's truly urgent and emergent. What's a daily task? What's something I can delegate? What's something that I should say no to? Mm-hmm. So I think us women, we don't need more classes on healing the inner critic, time management techniques, or setting boundaries. When you heal a busy brain, that just comes naturally. So if you were to tell me, Dr. Romy, could you fly tomorrow to Calgary and give a 7-hour workshop to my clients? I can now have a boundary and say, no, I'm sorry, I'm not available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas a person who has a busy brain, that request feels as important as taking care of my elderly parents.
Yeah. And they will almost consider it, even if they have no room in their schedule. Yes. They're thinking, yes, how can I make this work?
How can I make this happen? And yeah, and the FOMO of the business comes in, or people pleasing and all those things. But it's healing the busy brain first so that you can really prioritize what's needed in your brain. You put the boundaries in your brain and then they show up in your life.
You said two important things there. One, the chronic stress. I don't think a lot of people have considered this before, that you can be in a state of chronic stress and then you can have an acute stress that drops in on top of that. So that's a compounding effect. For example, I have a client and she has, her body experiences systemic inflammation from an autoimmune disease, and her body is very stressed. She lives in chronic stress. But then she does an evening workout thinking, I'm able for this now. Now that adds on an acute stress. And then I have her tracker sleep, and we saw her HRV was terrible. Her body wasn't able to deal with all of that. But like you said, when you said it, I have a list of things to do and now my kid is sick and I have no one to help me.
Yeah.
I almost lost my breath because I can feel the pressure on my chest.
Like all of us feel it. Oh, we've all been there. And then you have a busy brain and it feels like there's no solution anywhere. And I can't say no to anybody. And that's the life we're living in today's world. And we have to heal a busy brain so that there are guardrails up on our schedule and boundaries in our life. And so, you know, to anybody listening that's calm and doesn't have a busy brain, they were like, of course your child being sick is the most important thing, not your job. But trust me, any of us that are in a busy brain, in that moment, you're feeling overwhelmed and you can't make a decision. That's what chronic stress does to us.
I have experienced that so many times. And as you're speaking there, I was like feeling it. And inside me, when that happens, I'm sure other women can relate, there's a small cry for help, like, help. Yeah. I can't do all this. I can't do everything. I think we're starting to realize that now, like you mentioned. Now we're not doing the 4-hour day. We're not only sleeping for four. We're starting to realize we can't do this. We're not designed to do this. The second important thing you said, and I said this to a client yesterday, was stress will present differently in different people. Some people will experience urticaria, like a stress response rash. I also will get terrible gastric issues, or my central nervous system will just have the jitters. It presents differently in everyone. Some people will lose their hair. Some people will vomit chronically. Like it does have, you must have an allergy. God bless you again. It will present, but it does manifest in physical ways. That's important for people to understand. It's not just emotions. It's not just hormones. Yeah. It will manifest itself.
Sooner or later, it will. And what we find with busy brain is people will initially have the cognitive and mental symptoms and ignore it. And women will hear, oh, you're just a tired, stressed out mom. You're just hormonal. But there's actually something going on. And in chapter 6 and 7 of the book, I break it down that men and women, and let's talk about women here, who are having difficulty focusing and feeling anxious will think, I'm just stressed. I'm not cutting it. I'm not meant to be a mom. I'm not meant to be a working mom, whatever it is. There's actually the chronic stress response has led to hormonal imbalances. 1 in 8 women in North America has an undiagnosed or subclinical thyroid disease. Mm-hmm. And it has to keep going until there's physical ramifications like your hair falling out, acne, irregular menstrual cycles, infertility, early menopause, whatever it may be, other autoimmune diseases before you realize it. But wow, if I take a proper history and integrative medicine and look back a few years ago, it was just the mental symptoms. And so that's why I wrote this book, because if you are a man or a woman and you're like, yeah, I can't focus, I'm feeling low-key anxious. Hey, we need to look at this before the physical disease and chronic disease sets in.
My mentor, Dr. Michael Platt, I don't know if you've heard of him, but he proposes that up to 80% of society are driven by adrenaline and adrenaline dominance. And that's what's really driving the anxiety and what's causing the adrenaline. We could go into that. And we already did with the demands of society and expectations we have on ourselves as
I agree. I think it's a little more than just the adrenaline. There's a great book out there I would recommend to anybody listening that geeks out on science the way you and I do, called Dopamine Nation. Mm-hmm. And it's that in today's world globally, we want that quick fix, that hit. It's social media, it's emails, it's text messages, it's instant gratification. If I want to buy something, I'm going to buy it online and get it shipped to me tomorrow morning immediately. You know, there isn't this delayed gratification of let me go look at a shopping mall and look at 20 different dresses and try them on and save the money. Now it's go online, click and put 7 in your shopping cart on a credit card and worry about the money later, right? Mm-hmm. And that's known as the dopamine nation. And that will drive then the adrenal fatigue. But that's like a downstream effect. That initial dopamine high we want in the brain is what's causing the busy brain.
Well, that's what Dr. Platt alludes to, is what's causing the adrenaline. This is what I had mentioned to you before we recorded, and I was hoping we could get into, and now we are getting into.
And here we are. Yeah.
So adrenaline is what's driving most of our actions, but what's causing the adrenaline apart from the demand? So
it's the dopamine high. It's the need for instant gratification. Let me call it what it is. Calling it dopamine nation or dopamine high is a polite term. Can I call what it is? It's instant gratification and addiction.
But then
because our brains and our lives have been rewired that I want instant gratification now. I need it now. That is the way society has been rewired, whether you are in the workplace, whether you're in your personal life, whether it's a love life, it is that dopamine high. We have rewired ourselves, our digital technology. So in chapter 9, I go through this is when I first started my neurology residency training, neurology and psychiatry in the 1990s, we didn't recognize adult onset ADHD as even a disease. Mm-hmm. And the last 7 to 8 years, it is because of all of our multiple digital digital device use. When we look at the higher rates of neurodiverse issues in our children, let's say Gen Z, it's because they are on these digital devices, video games, everything all day long for school, for their personal life. And again, this the way society has turned, right? Just you can almost, is it society values to some degree, right? Where you're always looking for the next bigger, better thing. You know, when you and I were raised, our parents would work at one job or in one company for the most of their lives. They didn't really leave their jobs or careers. Now everyone's always online looking for the next raise, the next better company, the next best thing, the next person to date, the next thing to buy on Amazon, you know? Yeah.
So I agree with you 100%, but, and I'd love your opinion on this, I believe there are two pathways. The pathway that you've mentioned that we kind of did it to ourselves. We've created this demon in society that's destroying us, basically.
Yes.
But there's also the other pathway, and I did an article on this 2 or 3 weeks ago, and the title was, is sugar really an addiction? And it covered all addictions, but basically it was along the same lines, but it was back to what we spoke about before we even recorded, is what is causing this need for the dopamine hit, apart from the demon in society we've done to ourselves? But if we go deeper and further back, why are we craving this dopamine? What kind of trauma is there? What stress? Were we not loved as a kid? Was our mom, did she have anger issues when we were pregnant? There's that.
Yeah, but see, that stuff was always there. That's always been there in society. But to me, I agree. What is it? There's social media. You know, one, we know in young girls and women, this comparison. Mm-hmm. That wasn't there when we were growing up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Comparing this external world and all of that. And so, you know, trauma is there. Mm-hmm. You know, ills of society has always been there.
But now we've added in the societal demons. Mm-hmm. We already had this.
Yes.
My parents abused me. I wasn't loved. I was adopted, blah, blah, blah. My husband had an affair. We already have this trauma, but now we bring in society and we've compounded it.
Yes.
And now we're getting hit from all.
And we're doing unhealthy coping mechanisms that are feeding into addiction, whether it's eating too much sugar, whether it's being on social media, whether it's drinking alcohol, whether it's a sex addiction, whatever it is, being on TikTok 9 hours a day, like all of it is feeding into that dopamine reward system.
Yeah. So then I put this question to you because I put it to all my guests and it's very simple. In your opinion, why are people so unhappy now that they want this dopamine hit all the time?
Yeah. My answer, you know, goes along with busy brain and maybe a little spiritual at the same time, you know, is we can't be happy when we have a busy brain. The voices of inner judgment, like we said, you can't figure out what's emergent or important in your life, and you have too much going on. That's mm-hmm. that's the brain level. But could I take it to a spiritual level of why we're not happy? Is it that I feel at any given point as a child, we inherently know our values and our truth of what we're meant to be in life and who we're meant to be. Some of it is our nature and our genes, and other is our environment, and that we're out of alignment with life purpose and our values. And keeping up with a society norm that may not be aligned with our values, it's not a judgment. It's just, you know, I'm going to use a one example is what if you know, you choose to be a podcaster and social media influencer and I don't, it doesn't make either one of us right or wrong. It was a business decision, right? Mm-hmm. But there's something that people don't listen to their values and they just look and say, I need to do what Shemaine's doing or I'm not going to be happy. She seems happy. And rather than looking within and the spiritual tools we're given to do that, number one. So for me, that's been, you know, my mindfulness, meditation, prayer practice. I think of some of the values instilled in me through my family, you know, and anytime I've been unhappy in life, I veered away from that spiritually and that I thought something external would make me happy. So when I write a book, I'll be happy. When I hit the bestseller list, I'll be happy. No. But when I went back and focused and said, I'm happy because I researched this book. I suffered and I don't want anyone else to suffer. And thousands of other people who took part in the research were suffering. And it's about making impact. Then I'm happy. I'm not looking at a superficial external goal. And those success metrics are great and they're needed, but I'm happy because of the impact I'm making, of being of service. And so if I had to summarize that, I think there's two type of people in this world. Mm-hmm. There are the servant leaders or the people who wake up and say, like you or I, of how can I help even one person today? How can I make the world a better place today? Mm-hmm. Then there are the other people that wake up that don't have that, that they're selfish. They're saying, what can I do to succeed today? What can I do to put my family ahead today? What can I do to make millions? Now, there's nothing wrong with caring for your family or wanting to make money, but when that's your only focus at the cost of kindness and compassion, mm-hmm. and selfishness has, I think that's why people are unhappy. When I meet some of the happiest people in the world, they don't have the status, even you and I do professionally, they're happy because they're helping others.
That's probably one of the best answers I've had so far. And I ask everybody, and what I smiled specifically when you said purpose and alignment. I don't think a lot of people know their true purpose or they're doing it. And sometimes I did a recent article for a magazine out of California and they asked me how I found my purpose. And I was like, well, this might be my purpose right now, but I don't know if it's my purpose long-term.
Correct. It always evolves. It evolves. Yeah.
And then the alignment, the older I get, the more I'm saying, you know what? This doesn't make me happy, so I'm not doing that. Or even mm-hmm. if this does make me $10,000 to do this workshop, it's going to take away from my family time. I don't want to do that. I'm more trying to be aligned to find, even when I gratitude journal, I'm saying I'm finding my happiness. I might feel happy, but I'm still finding my true happiness. And it breaks my heart that so many people are unhappy because and I'd love your input on this. We did speak about productivity, but I see it affects their success in what they want for themselves. Obviously, specifically, I focus on health and body composition, but it impedes them. There's a block there, and I can't help them get past it because it's in them.
They'll never be happy because, you know, they come to you and they say, I'll be happy when I get down to my goal weight of X that I was at when I was 18. And you can help them with your knowledge to get to that and balance their hormones. Then they're going to get to it and they're not happy. And they move the goal marker again. And because they didn't look within to say, what does health really mean to me? What would make me happy? What's in alignment in my health or in my professional life or in my family? Yeah.
Yeah. So even the people that do get to their goal like that, and I can tell you from someone who's, I lost 165 pounds and I've been maintaining since 2008, I can tell you it's great. I feel great, but that wasn't the key to my happiness. It was a piece of the puzzle, but it was not the key. But with some other clients, and they're desperate. They want help and we'll help them and they'll have great results for 8 to 12 weeks. And they're well on their way to their goal, but something happens. And that unhappiness shows its ugly face again. And they struggle to come back from it. And that's the part I don't understand. And
so that's the human condition. That's the acute on chronic stressor that will show up, whether they recognize it or it's a subconscious trigger. And then that's when I say, well, maybe that's not for you or I to fix. And I hope they find a therapist or another type of healer, right? Yeah. And that's their life journey. And I'm not here to judge, but I'm going to hold a container for them. Mm-hmm. And if I know the healer to send them to, or if they're open, and I'm not going to suffer if I said, you need to go see this therapist and they don't do it for another 3 years or they never do it. It's their path. But I'm not going to let it rob me of happiness. But when I hold that container without judgment for someone, then they feel safe in the container with us. And they know, hey, when I come out of this funk, or maybe I will listen and go see that therapist, then, you know, they break through again. And that's what life is all about, is constantly up leveling. I mean, I haven't figured it all out, neither of you. And the minute we think, life is calm. I'm going with the flow. Another big lesson, hairy lesson shows up to us. And, you know, just, I hope everyone has that ritual that will bring them back to use your words, you know, alignment and your purpose.
I'd hope everyone listens to this, because I can't emphasize enough how much this finding happiness is going to impact every aspect of your life. But you said there's two type of people. I think there's many types of people, obviously, but in this context, there's two types of people.
Yeah.
There's people like me and you who we haven't fully found our happiness, but we have looked at our struggles and we're trying to find the lesson in that and align with what we want as we go forward to further help propel what we want for ourselves. So it's really that what we want for ourselves, we're staying aligned. So there's that group of people, but then there's the group of people who struggle and they have unhappiness, but they just get frustrated and they choose to not acknowledge what's going on, and then they continue with more struggle.
So that's temporary happiness. That's that dopamine high you and I were talking about, rather than being anchored in true joy or spiritual happiness, right? And I think as we wrap up, I would say, you know, heal your busy brain, and then really that intuition, or I call it internal soul compass, in the book comes out and really reminds you of, in this moment, what is your purpose? Are you in alignment with your values? Do you need to rethink what your values are? Mm-hmm. And we can wish that for everyone, that they find not the temporary dopamine high happiness, but sustaining joy.
And our goal is to help people, of course, and your book does that. So the first recommendation you have is that we take the test, and I will pop the link below, and then people will get, you said, the first two weeks
of the protocol get emailed to you, and the rest is in the book. Chapters 10 through 17, you can go straight there, and it walks you through the 8-week protocol.
Yeah. And I, while we were talking, I double checked, because a lot of people, of course, use Amazon nowadays. The book is on Amazon Canada.
Oh, yes.
And I have many clients in the States as well. I'm sure it's easy to get there. But sometimes actually we can't get certain American books in Canada. Yeah. So
No. This is HarperCollins, and it was released globally on January 9th in English. So even both of our clients that are in Europe, they can order it. Amazon in EU at Waterstone. It's in bookstores in Canada. We've had a lot of our Canadian clients sending us pictures of the bookstores there. In the United States, also Barnes and Noble's, Target, Walmart. It's on Kindle. It's on Amazon, and 6 more languages coming this year.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's an honor to be of service. And yes, I'm so happy. I've known since I was in the 4th grade, I had a book in me, and to be able to write something that can even help one other person, I've done my job. So thank you for having me on your podcast, that even if one of your listeners or my listeners hears this and they have that aha moment and they're happy, well, then you and I have done our job.
Or at least they have more awareness around finding their happiness and how important it is and everything. Yes. So I will post all the links. I'm very grateful for your time. That was a fantastic answer. If you could leave my clients and followers who feel so overwhelmed now and like they have no hope at all, if you could leave them with a piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, girl, my sisters, I've been there. When I was sitting in the surgeon's office, I literally knew what it felt like to have hope depart your soul. Like, if you have been there, it is the worst feeling in the world. And I'm going to tell you what I wish someone had told me then. Your brain is not broken. Your mind is not a mess. And hope did not depart your soul. I just want you to heal your busy brain and do it one brain shift at a time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Great. Thank you for that. This has been a real pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
No one.